You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
We're meeting on a day when we hit new all-time highs. Bitcoin approached $110,000. Got Jesse back on the show to talk about many things, not just the price ripping. A lot of good things happening on the Unchained side of things. Launching Gannett Trust.
We'll get into it. Yeah, lots of stuff happening. I think the price likes Gannett. I think that's the mover.
I mean, that's been a big discussion in the space right now is, are we heading to new all-time highs? How should Bitcoiners be preparing? How much Bitcoin do people need to retire? How are you thinking about all this as we approach what seems to be another bull cycle?
Yeah, that's a common question, right? How much Bitcoin do I need to retire? I get it a lot, and there's so many other questions I want to ask. Like, well, how much money are you spending, right? Do you need to be on a yacht every week, or are you staying humble and keeping those sats? And so the amount of Bitcoin can vary because the spending pressure you're putting against your Bitcoin stack is the biggest factor, right? And age is probably the second. A 30-year-old retiring on Bitcoin is different than a 75-year-old retiring on Bitcoin just because of the horizon. So stacks vary. We've got people retiring with less than seven figures of Bitcoin because they have other assets. And then we have people retiring with hundreds of Bitcoin and putting very little pressure against that portfolio. So can go in a lot of different ways, but it is a question of the day. As you're poking new all-time highs, everyone's like, well, how high is it going to get? And then huge question is, do we have cycles again, right? If countries are buying, what would a downside look like? And that's the big question in the retiree's mind is, how do I protect and not ride that downside all the way down if we do have another 70, 80% drawback?
Yeah. No, and I think particularly for younger people, having in their mind like the perspective of 21 million Bitcoin, 8 billion people. What's the stat? 60 million millionaires in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How many sats do I need to get to feel comfortable that I have a sufficient slice of the Bitcoin pie?
That feel comfortable concept is just so different, right? Because Bitcoin is moving and shaking and all-time highs are down 30%, and that's still within a bull market. Is that comfortable, right? Can you actually hang it up and like, all right, not going into work and I'm just going to continue to ride these adoption cycles? I don't know if it ever gets comfortable. The most comfort comes from putting as little pressure as possible against that stack, right? That you're not pushing these withdrawal rates of like 5, 10, 20% of my Bitcoin stack. I'm needing to live on every, because then you're requiring Bitcoin to do something for you in the short term, which is just not great at, right? What's Bitcoin price going to be in a year? Far less reliable than what's Bitcoin price going to be in 30 years.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the holdups too is the ability for people to get into Bitcoin and know where to put it and not only have certainty of what it will be valued at in 30 years, but will they have access to it? That's one thing that you guys have been very much focused. I know Sound Advisory is separate from Unchained technically, but within the Unchained umbrella, but Unchained focused on helping secure individuals and businesses and trust Bitcoin. And I think today's announcement of Gannett Trust is a massive step in a direction towards more certainty for long-term holdings for particular entities.
Yes, the Unchained umbrella or family of companies is growing, and the intention will be for Sound Advisory to tuck under or be merged into, folded into Gannett Trust Company as it gets stood up. But it is the most robust compliance offering that is out there in the fiduciary space. And so that, in my opinion, was the one thing missing as people want to live on a Bitcoin standard. Sometimes they're in an entity or an organization or have a structure that requires a fiduciary standard. And these two coming together is solved by Gannett Trust Company. So it's going to be the most robust way to hold Bitcoin and have like true inheritance that can be administered through generations.
So how does this work mechanically via Gannett?
Mechanically? So as the first Bitcoin native trust company, other trust companies do exist, right? But they don't build upon Bitcoin in the way that Unchained has. So Gannett in its Unchained roots and using Unchained technology is going to be able to use multi-sig to achieve trust company goals. And what that likely will mean is Gannett holding a key, Unchained holding a key, third party holding a key. Those three keys together ensure that the Bitcoin's not being held at any one spot. Right? We could get into the Coinbase honeypot. We actually talked about this on our last episode. Like, hey, what do you think is the risk out there that the industry might disagree with? He said, I'm launching a new segment. I'm going to ask you a prediction. What's out there that the industry doesn't see eye to eye with you at? And I was at conferences and they're saying, hey, Coinbase is the best. That's where we put all the cut. It means all the keys are at Coinbase. And with the news of the last week, like, hey, there could be cracks, right? If you've got exposure to Coinbase now, you could be questioning. I was on the list. I got the email. You were affected. That's not great. It doesn't feel good knowing that information. That information could have been a lot worse. That headline could have been private keys being mismanaged. When you overlay what Gannett is going to offer to the custody space, it means that not all of the keys are going to be at any one entity. And so that gives the Bitcoiner who understands multisig the confidence that, okay, I'm upgrading from a honeypot to a distributed key setup. But it has to be done in a fiduciary and compliant way to satisfy the institutional and big money of the world, right? Family offices, Bitcoin treasury companies, they're going to need a structure that the CIO, the CFO can point to and say, yes, that is regulated. That meets all of our expectations, all of our standards. That's going to satisfy our board, our CPAs. There's a long list of industry professionals that have fiduciary obligations to clients, and they just need certain boxes checked. And that's what the trust company brings to the table. So trust company, think fiduciary standard, and then Bitcoin multi-sig, like Bitcoin standard through Unchained, combining those two things. It's that Venn diagram overlap that is going to be the true unlock and upgrade.
Yeah, and this is desperately needed right now as Coinbase, via the emergence of ETFs, how popular their launches were. Obviously, the Bitcoin treasury companies, which you mentioned, MicroStrategy really leaning into that more and more, and now a bunch of copycats coming to market. And Coinbase has taken a large part of that market in terms of securing those treasuries.
Perfect use case. I've floated the idea internally. I think it might be too early. That's like a first week in business, but going for an ETF, right? How is a third, fourth, or fifth place AUM ETF keeping up with the BlackRock and the Fidelity? They all just hold spot Bitcoin. That's what they have. And so I look at that space as maybe it's a Bitwise or an R-Curve. You know, someone on that list might want to have a multi-sig secure Bitcoin ETF. Gannett can hold a key. Unchained holds a key. ETF provider potentially even hold a key, right? Now you've got three people securing that Bitcoin, and it's not all at Coinbase. I think 10 of the 12 ETFs are at Coinbase, all but Fidelity and VanEck. Fidelity custodies their own keys, and VanEck uses Gemini. 10 out of the 12 are at Coinbase, and we just saw that they had an exposure last week, right? So it's kind of showing you there's cracks, and again, it can be a structure, and it can evolve into many different use cases of securing coins for large pools of capital with multi-sig, multi-institutional, yet still regulated and compliant to fiduciary standards.
And moving from like the corporate and ETF balance sheets, but for high net worth individuals, from what I understand, the problem of holding Bitcoin in a trust in a way that makes hardcore Bitcoiners feel comfortable has been pretty hard.
Yeah.
To date.
Yeah. As a precursor, a lot of trust structures are pursued because you've got to get the money out of your name. Right? It's got to get out of Marty's name or out of Jesse's name. Because if you die with too much money, there's the death tax. Now, that number fluctuates all around. Right now, it's about $28 million for a married couple. It's on the table in the Trump tax bill to maybe change. But the number fluctuates. But if you're over $28 million, you're in this world where you could be exposed to the death tax. And so there's estate planning where you get the money out of your name and into some other entity. That's often a trust, sometimes an LLC, but in this case, we'll use a trust. That trust has to have separation from you. And so when you get into the key management or who's the trustee part of that, there's sometimes a conflict between the Bitcoiner and then the trust structures. Like Bitcoiners, like, I want to hold keys, right? That's what Bitcoiners mean by custody, is like no keys, no cheese, keys above all else. Bitcoin doesn't know about trust. It doesn't care about trust. It cares about private keys. But trust company, can serve as a trustee on that trust, right? So having a trust company that understands Bitcoin, understands proper key management, that can be the overlapping solution, that I need to get this money out of my name for significant death tax reasons. Now it's in the structure, I'm happy with the rules, but something professional needs to oversee that those rules are actually carried through. That's what trust companies or professional trustees do for trusts, that they are held legally to a fiduciary standard to effectuate that trust. If it says do this, that's what the trust company makes sure happens. So having one of those that gets Bitcoin, gets key management, that's the solution that we saw was missing in the space. And it's over a year ago. A lot of hard work went into it. It's live. We're standing it up and really excited about what that's going to be able to unlock.
Yeah, I know it's been a Herculean task for you guys to get this out there. So I'm pumped. And honestly, like looking at the history of trust companies within the ecosystem, they haven't been so trustworthy. Like entities like Prime Trust and others, and it seems like they were cutting corners to bring a product to market that many sort of white label exchanges were anchoring into.
Maybe perhaps similar to Coinbase, they would have been better focusing on Bitcoin, building on Bitcoin, and got distracted by crypto. So there are other trust companies out there, and they're very amenable to like altcoins and, you know, how broad trust companies can be with many different types of assets, but what's going to be the one that starts to go deep into Bitcoin, right? And having it be a serious focus and designing the operations, procedures, protections, security that Bitcoiners kind of demand from a key control perspective, it was just missing. So,
yeah. So beyond the sort of multi-institution, multi-sig, what does it mean going deeper in terms of giving those types of clients that comfortability?
You know, when you're operating at those levels, especially in like the family and in inheritance side, I'm sure you've heard the term trust fund kid, right? These structures can last generations. And it is a way to make money last beyond yourself, but with your intentions. And so when you're having conversations about, well, what did the trust say? Sometimes there can be an interpretation of like, well, how does that apply to the family? So there is, if you're getting into the weeds in each specific family, like trust officers, as they're carrying out the role of the trust, they're like, okay, this kid or this beneficiary has this need. Does that meet the terms of the trust? And there's a lot of, just administration, and you're kind of along with the family in that ride, right? Everyone's kind of beholden to the trust structure, and it can't always be changed, and it just is what it is. And, you know, trust fund kids now because of it. How does the trust company navigate how money goes out of the trust and to beneficiaries, and for what reasons? They're just very involved from an administration and like relationship management side of things. So yeah, that would be on like the family side. And the treasury side, you can look at different strategies. Like I imagine where you've got Bitcoin and a serious focus on Bitcoin as a treasury company, but you want to reduce volatility within that because it's too much, right? So designing other, let's call them fiat components around, maybe it's using derivatives or rebalancing to cash in an automated way if things get out of band. When a trust company is involved and it has some level of control in being able to make those like rebalancing or derivative decisions with and for your company, then you can have more of an autopilot like volatility compression within your treasury. So there are lots of different applications, and we're just now like standing up the basics. It'll roll out to Unchained clients before the broader public, just because of the pent up demand. And we'll see where it goes. Like I think the sky is the limit, because we've seen over the last 6 months, like Wall Street is here and it is headbutting Bitcoin head on, right? Those worlds are colliding, and navigating the middle and what's going to satisfy both sides. Trust companies, just a powerful Swiss Army knife that can unlock a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, on the topic of volatility suppression, you had it in your pre-production notes that you want to talk about MISTI, which is in all these different sort of derivatives and preferred offerings that Strategy has leaned into themselves with Strike and Strife, and then products like MISTI and MSTU, which have sort of emerged as derivative plays on MicroStrategy's strategy to get a different return profile.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it, is like different return profile, right? It's all built upon Bitcoin. You've got Bitcoin as a base layer as money. MicroStrategy is a company that is built on Bitcoin. It's got all of the risks of Bitcoin, right? The volatility, the political, the technical, but then it's got its own set of risks, MicroStrategy risks. Let's call them Sailor and, you know, key control and profitability and governance and all company. Then you have derivatives, which are on top of MicroStrategy, and they retain the risks of everything underneath. They have all the MicroStrategy risks, all the Bitcoin, and then their own set of derivative risks. And so when I was asked the question a dozen times earlier in this year, I was like, okay, this is where the question set is heading. I better get into it, and ended up releasing an article about MSTY specifically, because that was the hot buzz of the day. And like, what are the risks? Some aren't so bad, and then others I had seen were catastrophic in the past. And so I lived through COVID, the March 2020, as an advisor, and saw certain ETF or derivative structures, ETFs that use derivatives, they blew up during COVID, like just unrecoverable, down 95%, never came back. And these were gold mining ETFs. And I thought that that was a pretty good analogy, because Bitcoiners are sympathetic to the gold bugs, right? To this day, gold is approaching all-time highs like Bitcoin, but that ETF that used derivatives on gold miners has never recovered. It never came back. And so a Bitcoiner could be right about the underlying thesis of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin could be successful. But if derivative-based ETFs aren't managed well, or there's a rush for the exits and someone needs to sell and into a illiquid market, it can blow everything up. It can affect everyone in the pool. And so the metaphor I started to tease out, which I didn't know if it was kosher or not, but I landed on it and I'm comfortable with how edgy it is. It's if a whale pees in the pool, everyone is affected, right? If a large participant in an ETF structure wants out in size, and MSTY in particular is using derivatives to create a synthetic MicroStrategy position and then call options against that as well, that can be an illiquid market, right? If there's a rush to dollars, global crisis, correlation to one, everyone wants dollars and a big whale wants out of MSTY, they could sell those derivative positions into an illiquid market where there's no bid. And it basically, I mean, that's my read on what happened with the gold mining ETF that never recovered. I've got clients asking questions. I'm looking out for something like that. Like, what is the risk and how do we avoid a 95% collapse that's unrecoverable? Because you could be right about Bitcoin, and if you had too much of your money in MSTY, you're down bad, never coming back.
Sup, freaks? This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They make the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet, the most secure hardware wallet on the market. As you can see, it's got the BlackBerry form factor, full keyboard. It's got two secure enclaves. You create your private public keys offline. The device never has to go online, never does go online. So you keep your Bitcoin secure. If you have your Bitcoin on exchanges and you're looking to get it off, secure it in the best way possible. Pick up a Cold Card Q. Go to CoinKite.com, find the Cold Card Q, use the code TFTC for 5% off. If you're a power user of Bitcoin, like I am, if you're running a business on a Bitcoin standard, if you're just a Bitcoiner who wants to secure your Bitcoin, get the most secure hardware wallet on the market, go get the Cold Card Q. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, so let's dive into sort of what MSTY does or how it's marketed, the way I understand it. Yeah. And I'll admit my understanding is cursory, just at an arm's length from observing people talk about it on X for the last 3 months or whatever, since the beginning of the year, actually. So from what I understand, you put money into this ETF, that's your principal, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. these derivatives and options sort of structures are layered into the ETF, which provide fixed income based off the principal that you're putting in.
Mm.
Is that correct?
Pretty close. Only one word I'm going to pull out of that. It's not fixed. Not fixed
yeah, not
income.
Fixed, so yeah.
Income. And this is a misconception that was rampant on Twitter, calling it a dividend, right? Dividends come from profits. MSTY is not issuing a dividend. It's a distribution. Similar, but a big difference, right? Because the distribution can be options or premiums that are received from the option, but it can also be return of capital. If you give me $100 and I'm like, thanks, Marty, and I give you $20 back, you have no idea if that was from profit that I actually used in a business activity or a good investment, or I just gave you $20 of your $100 back, right? I distributed it back to you, but it wasn't a dividend. And so I think it could be helpful to pause and just, what is the income generating piece of MSTY? They're writing call options against an underlying position. What that means, and writing a call option, it's very simple. It's just trading your upside for income. You can imagine you have 100 shares of MicroStrategy and you think it's going to the moon. You don't know when. You're like, I'd really like to live on some of it now. Let me pick a date. Let's call it December. And if MicroStrategy goes to $600 a share, I'd be willing to part with it after that. You can have all the moon. I'm happy to let it go for $600. The person taking the other side of that trade is buying the call option at 600, right? MicroStrategy. If it goes to 700, they're going to get it from you at 600. And so for giving them that promise of unlimited upside, you're getting income now, today. You're going to get like a premium or a paycheck for giving them that promise. That is the writing a call option strategy. It's one of the most basic and one of the most harmless options strategies. It's not one of the more advanced, levered. It's just trading your upside for income now. It's a more of a protective strategy. And MSTY is doing that. They don't necessarily hold MicroStrategy underneath the hood. They've said they use synthetic derivatives to create what's similar to MicroStrategy, right? So they might not even have the exact 100 shares that are called away at a certain price. Adds a little bit of complexity, in my opinion, reduces some liquidity because you're dealing with more and more options and less MicroStrategy shares. And so it's a risk. Doesn't mean it's right or wrong, but it's there. We need to understand what's happening. I quoted a client what MicroStrategy yield is looking like at certain price points this week. And we came up with a range of, what could be reasonable. We got an annualized yield between 16 and 22% that we were looking at for a particular client. MSTY's most recent distribution was annualized at like 120%. So I look at that and like, I'm seeing the same options market, right? We're looking at writing call options against MicroStrategy for a client. We think 16 to 22% is reasonable trading income for upside. Now, 120% is well beyond that 16 to 22, but it is happening. So the questions are, is some of that return of capital? Is some of that leverage? Is some of that just money rushing in and demanding, and it's hot right now? I don't know, but I see risks. And my main job for clients is just protecting them against risks that they might not see themselves. So hopefully that's a little glimpse under the hood. Happy to click in deeper, tease it out.
Yeah, well, it's MSTY has been one of the, like, one of those things the last 6 months where it's reminding me a lot of like waves of altcoin pump and dumps in the past. And not saying that MSTY is a pump and dump. I'm just saying the pattern recognition alarm bells are going off a little bit when you have people sharing screenshots of how much money they put in, what the distribution looks like, mm-hmm. and they're calling people idiots for holding Bitcoin. And I'm just like, it almost seems too good to be true, but then you'll be like, hey, this, we're at this inflection point. Nation states are adopting Bitcoin. All these corporate treasuries are adopting Bitcoin. It's up only from mm-hmm. here. And so we're arbing this mm-hmm. information asymmetry that still exists in the market. And we're in a super cycle.
It does a ring of that, right? Like 2017 is ICOs, 2021 is NFTs. Now we got MSTYs. They always have letters. People are piling into something, thinking it's a silver bullet, and then the narrative can take off on its own. I saw similar things. Hey, I was years away from retirement, but I decided to YOLO it all into MSTY, and now I retired both myself and my mom. She's in 100% MSTY. It's like, okay, it's not a dividend, so you just call it a dividend within that. And saying, you're, what are the risks, right? Because if you go down 90% and you're never coming back, that can be a life-altering. If you put all your money into something and lose 19 out of 20 eggs and it's never coming back, it's unrecoverable. And that's, I'm sure it happened with ICOs and NFTs, you know, FTXs. And if we're looking at something like MSTY, we just need to know the risks. Now, the same strategy can be done. And so what I saw as the biggest risk within that MSTY, that whale in the pool moment, is that you can just have a private pool. You can do it yourself. You can write the options yourself. You could stay in your, you don't need to use MSTY to get income from MicroStrategy. And so that's something that we started rolling out to our clients internally. They're called SMAs, separately managed accounts. You can think of it as like a private pool that, hey, this is your own MicroStrategy. We will do your call option. If someone else wants out of MSTY, you wouldn't know. You're not in a part of that pool. You're in your own private way. And so if and when it is right for clients, there's a better way to do it that removes some of the biggest risks.
Yeah, that's what I wonder is how many individuals, entities that are piling into MSTY understand the risk and view it as a game of hot potato where they're just going to juice the distributions for mm-hmm. 6 months, a year, whatever it may be, and then yeah. get out when they feel mm-hmm. like they've sufficiently produced enough income.
Mm-hmm. And is MSTY aware of the narrative they've caught, right? They've caught this big pool and audience, and they can juice their own distributions. They can return some capital. They can take on a little more leverage, get a little more aggressive. And can that cause an unsuspecting person to be like going along with the herd, right? If MSTY is successful and gathering all of this narrative and inflow because of it, their incentives are aligned to keep that up, right? Keep every distribution higher than the last. And are you marching towards more and more risk thinking you're in something like a fixed income? That's the big, because it's not fixed. It could dry up. You could have something happen to Bitcoin, which I don't think would happen and I hope doesn't. That would affect everything above it. MSTR and the derivatives. You could have something to have the MicroStrategy, right? Something happened to Sailor or the company. That would affect everything about, and then its own set of risks, like the fund management risk that you're in the pool with everyone else. And you've got the decision making of that manager who's making a decision for all of the pool participants. And so if it's right, I think the private pool is a better way to go. Just have the options managed according to you. You can dial it up, make it spicier. You can dial it down and make it more plain vanilla. It's your private pool. You can kind of control the temperature. MSTY is a little bit too much going along with the herd for my comfort. So,
who's issuing MSTY?
I believe a company called YieldMax, or is that just the name of them? You might have to double check on that one. I have the fact sheet posted in the article. That would be a link to the company's page.
Sup, freaks? Stop asking how to value Bitcoin.
Start asking how to value everything else in Bitcoin. Unchained and Strive, Vivek Ramaswamy's asset management firm, just released a new report called Repricing the Economy in Bitcoin. It introduces a Bitcoin-denominated DCF model and shows what happens when you revalue equities like Apple using Bitcoin instead of dollars. This isn't just a thought experiment. It's a framework for capital allocation. Read it now at unchained.com/TFTC. That's unchained.com/TFTC.
And then, obviously, this is a derivative of MicroStrategy and what they're doing, but how does it compare to something like Strike or Strife, these two preferred share offerings?
Yeah, so the Strike and Strife wouldn't be derivatives. They're not there's contracts on top of MicroStrategy. They're an actual offering from the company. Mm-hmm. And those are, let's just call them sailor's way to dampen the volatility, right? If you don't want all the volatility of MicroStrategy, but you want to use the power of what it's doing with Bitcoin in some different flavors, that's what Strike and Strife are for. I do mix them up from time to time, but one is a 10% preferred dividend. So the dividend has a little bit better taxation than bond interest income. It's taxed at a qualified dividend rate. So that can be nice and attractive, 10%. And depending on where it's trading, you can get higher than 10% if you're buying it below par. But it is attractive to the fixed income market because they're not being offered 10 or 11% in their world. So in that way, you're taking that nuclear reactor that Saylor's talked about with Bitcoin and like shoving it into a fixed income product. There you go. You got a 10 to 11% yield. The other one is convertible, so it's a little bit less yield, but it can retain some upside if MicroStrategy truly runs and pops, that you'll be able to participate in that. So think of that one as more of like a hybrid between the fixed income and some of that upside or pop.
Yeah. It's fascinating. What are your thoughts on all this financialization of, or the Bitcoinization of finance to a certain degree with all these unique offerings?
It's a lot to keep up with. There are times where clients will ask me something that I have never heard of. I got one this week. Hey, did you hear about MicroStrategy's third offering, STRD or something like that? I was like, no, I haven't. I went and looked. It's fake. It wasn't even real. It was some hypothetical that a YouTuber made up. Like, here's what I think MicroStrategy could do. And I'm like, oh, goodness, there's so much financialization and then so much social media momentum that can just, it can get overwhelming. But it was inevitable, right? That as Bitcoin collides with the world and Wall Street specifically, they're going to have to interact with its ruthless fairness and its like unchanging potential for how it improves people's finances. And they're going to create products around it. Some will be helpful, some will fail, some will hurt people. And it's the humans and the institutions colliding with this protocol that doesn't seem to be moving. It's doing its TikTok next block thing. And Wall Street doesn't operate with that level of patience or consistency. They're going to buzz around it and create a lot of, usually a lot of selling, right? That's where their interests are aligned. If we can create products and people buy those over Bitcoin, that's how we make money. So I think it's an interesting time to be a Bitcoin focused financial planner and advisor, because you have to help clients navigate that space. When we're at the top of the call talking about retirees, they love Bitcoin. My clients love Bitcoin. They believe in the future and what it's, but they're in their mid 60s, they're approaching 70. They need to retire now, and they're wanting to pull some of that forward because they've got more Bitcoin than time often, right? And so a financialized product can sometimes be a solution, but we don't want to approach it without understanding the risks and having balance around it. So very interesting time to be navigating case by case. What are all these products coming out, and how could I interpret and apply them in a way that my clients are still safe in meeting their goals?
I think the private pool options play is very smart. Yeah, I can't put my finger on, or I don't know if I can articulate it exactly, but again, pattern recognition, alarm bells going off, the animal spirits of
X community groups and YouTubers who think they're trading savants. It's just like some of this seems too good to be true. Not all of it, obviously. Bitcoin, nation state adoption, corporate treasury adoption in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's a very positive thing, but all of these derivative plays around it with people trying to catch up scares me. We recorded a podcast yesterday that'll come out on Friday with the 1031 guys, and John Arnold had a really good point. Like, people try to use leverage to become an OG. They have FOMO and they feel like they need to play catch up and accumulate enough Bitcoin to be on the level of who they perceive to be OGs. And the way they typically try to do that is leverage. And historically in Bitcoin, it's never worked out too well for people.
Yes. Over the years, whether it's just at Unchained or Sound Advisory, the two biggest things that wreck people are the ego and the emotion. Right? And that's, they're almost combined into the same thing. Every Bitcoiner I talk to feels like they were late because they know someone else who was in before them. They know someone who got a price lower than they did. And it can feel, it can be a shot to the ego that you're not as smart as you think you are, right? Bitcoin humbles all of us. And there's a reason why that saying exists, like stay humble, stack, because the emotion and the ego can lead you to do something, whether it's fear or greed driving you there, that you're going out on the risk spectrum and you're going to trade something that's more certain because you're feeling like you're lacking. And that is what wrecks people. I think it was the underlying thing under Celsius, BlockFi, FTX, that when Bitcoin's not doing something on your time frame and you want income or you want the yield, like, oh, I'll just put it with them and I'll get 5% more Bitcoin. Okay, well, now you've got Celsius. I'm just going to do this with it so I can have it. And you're kind of like bartering with Bitcoin because it's not meeting your expectations. Right? I've got a timeline. I want to do X, Y, and Z, and here's my ego. I want to impose it on Bitcoin. We're supposed to be this far into a halving. It should be at this price. It's not doing that. This chop is boring. Let me, and there's the ego, the emotion, right? I'm going to take a different risk level with my Bitcoin to try and do something with it. And I think people are blinded to the risk by the greed or the fear or the, it's the underlying cause of a lot of bad decisions.
Yeah. No, I think the right move, what I've learned over the years, is that when you feel that urge to lever up and try to play catch up, instead of expressing that by levering up your Bitcoin, go try to be more productive and produce more income so that you can buy more.
It's very real. Because everyone knows what fear and greed feel like. Nobody knows what like patience feels like. Just it's neutral and it's hard and it's discipline and it's continuing to work and build or have a disciplined investing strategy. If you're no longer working and building and you're retiring, like sometimes people are having to settle for the ultimate enemy of just like, I should have some dollars, right? If I have enough dollars to ride through a cycle, then I know I never need to sell Bitcoin this cycle. And that's the unfortunate trade-off that the hyper Bitcoinizing generations have to live through. Because we're not at full unit of account and medium of exchange yet. And if we're headed there, it's going to be volatile and we'll have this transition period where we live in the dollar and the Bitcoin at the same time. And in my opinion, that's what all the best companies are solving for, right? How do we navigate between dollars and Bitcoin as things are volatile? Whether it's Unchained, Strike, River, they're creating these dollar and Bitcoin services and products, secure and really designed to be a bridge, right? They're trying to build a strong, secure bridge where you can hop back and forth between those two worlds, dollar and Bitcoin, as your needs change. And I think that's where the majority of Bitcoin companies' value is being built.
Yeah. And it can only be built if you're focused, right? Which is very important.
Yeah. It's easy to buy a ticker symbol. It's hard to build something that hasn't existed before.
Right? That's the whole Bitcoin corporate treasury thing. Again, in and of itself, I think it's a good thing, but I think there is information asymmetry, a potential financial arbitrage that is being exploited right now. But at some point in the future, when Bitcoin reaches a particular liquidity profile, that game sort of has marginal diminishing returns. And
yes,
you're going to have to look at yourself as a business, as an entity, and be like, okay, how do I actually produce value and turn that value into income and EBITDA that allows me to sustain my business?
Yeah. The P&L will matter more as the balance sheet gets commoditized. Right? Saylor is a pioneer in putting it on the balance sheet. Early mover in size, found a lot of arbitrage opportunities, whether it's the convertible or the preferred. When you're first, you don't even have to be the best because you're the only. But now there's more and more participants. You're getting Bitcoin treasury companies that understand that it's powerful to put Bitcoin on a balance sheet. And at the end state, many, many companies will have Bitcoin on their balance sheet. It's table stakes at that point. And so how are you going to differentiate and provide value on top of Bitcoin? That's the building, right? And so in my opinion, there are some treasury companies that are doing the equivalent of buying that ticker symbol. Oh, if I just switch to Bitcoin balance sheet, all this money's going to flow to me. Still pretty early, right? You're probably still within the group of pioneers and that may happen, but it's not sustainable if you don't have a thesis or a value proposition of how you build value on top of Bitcoin. Just having Bitcoin on the balance sheet is not a sustainable unlock, because that's where most companies are going to be headed over the coming decades.
Yeah. And I can already hear people like, Marty, you're so bearish. You don't understand what's going on. I just want to say, hey, been around the block a few times, a few cycles. Just be careful out there. Be careful out there. Stay humble. Stack sats exist for a reason. And then and for anybody who doesn't understand, like, the stay humble stack sats meme started, Matt started it. This is like 6 or 7 years ago now at this point. And it's basically like, just don't go levered long. Don't margin trade. Don't shitcoin during the bull market, because that's how you get blown up.
Yeah.
And end up with less Bitcoin than you otherwise would have had.
Yeah. If I can fanboy for a little bit, I listen to you, Matt, all the time. And I love that quote. And I've started to personalize it for myself. The meme of stay humble, stack sats. And I see within the social media sometimes where people ask, well, how much Bitcoin do you have? Not enough. I never have enough Bitcoin. I've gotten to a point within my own personal life where I'm like, I feel like I have enough. If I can just stay humble, stack the sats, that my bullishness I'm trying to express through my patience. And so I'm changing that sats to Saturdays. I don't work on Saturdays and I want to stack those, because if I've got enough Bitcoin, what don't I have enough of is time with my family. I've got a boy who's about to be 7. I'm like, man, he's getting into T-ball and I need to stack Saturdays now, because the Bitcoin is, I'm confident that it'll be there in the long term. And I believe I have enough, and I'm trying to build and be patient and do the things that I think will make Bitcoiners proud and see this industry flourish. Let's stack some Saturdays too, right? And start to get some time. And like, it helps connect me to like, what is the Bitcoin all for? If I die and leave my family a stack and they're like, okay, well, what is, I want to have those meaningful experiences along the way. And I think that when people find that value and what connects them to their money, that can pull you out of the fear and greed. You're no longer comparing to, oh, so-and-so got in before me. They were class of 20, whatever. I've found a way that Bitcoin is a powerful tool in my life, and it's helping me stack some Saturdays, right? I get to live for now because I feel more confident in my future. And so I don't know if anyone had ever brought up that pun or double entendre to you, but that's what I'm hearing. If you guys close out your podcast, stay humble, stack sats, and I think y'all record on like a Thursday or Friday.
Depending
Saturdays,
on the week,
yeah. Okay. Saturday's coming. I'm like, all right, well, I don't know how many Saturdays I have left in this life. We know there's 21 billion Bitcoin. I've only got some time with a 6 and 7 year old, and I need to make today count. And so that's my own personal rabbit trail.
I love that
you never asked for, but it's deeply meaningful to me and helps me remember that Bitcoin is a tool that should be empowering our lives. It's that fix the world, you know, fix Jesse side of, okay, if the money's fixed, it can help be a tool in my life here and now.
No, I love that. And I've never heard it. So it's the first time I'm hearing a double entendre.
No, it reminded me, like last night we had an event here at Bitcoin Park Austin with Adam Back, Terdemeester, Parker, a bunch of others speaking. And everybody's like, oh, you want to go grab dinner? I was like, you know what? I'm going to go home. I was able to make it home in time for bedtime and read stories. And
you really feel that boys. Working in Bitcoin, like you're surrounded by it. All the questions, all the news, all the products and people and personalities and drama. And did you see who did this and that? And you're talking about Trump did something crazy. It can be so much that it's overwhelming. And to shrink down and be like, I'm just dad. I get to read a book. Might have read it 8 or 10 times before, but I'm never getting these moments back. And I am so fortunate that I get to work with clients in their 60s and 70s. And they have money. They have resources. And their retirement's locked. What do they want? A lot of them want to go back to when their kids were 6 and 7, right? They want that time back with their kids. And I'm fortunate that they share that with me. And it had brought tears to my eyes a couple of times because I'm like, okay, well, I get to live like that client. Their wish is to go back to where I am right now. And I get to live it, right? And I don't need to be stacking sats right now. I need to be stacking a Saturday and like really making the most of this moment. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's really important to put those things into perspective. It's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, I don't want to say regrets, but there's been times where I've like committed to something in the industry, I didn't have to do this. And then I get home, the kids are asleep. And I'm like, oh, I missed a bedtime tonight. Like that wasn't fun. Would have much rather done a bedtime then.
It's that double-edged sword of success, right? When things are taking off and Bitcoin's winning and your company's healthy and the people around you are excited and want to talk to you, it can take you from the people that are the most patient with you, right? My wife, my kid, my dad. I know you've got a story that's like that time is so precious, and remembering it and anchoring to it is a powerful draw against the negative emotions that Bitcoin can easily sweep you up into, right? Whether we have a bear in its fear or a bull in its greed, those aren't the emotions that you want in your life. You need to find something deeper than the tool, deeper than Bitcoin. Like, what are your values? For a lot of people, it's family and time. There can be others, you know, hobbies, just things that really connect you and make you feel alive. That's what the money's there for. That's what's going to fix the world. And that's once you know that, the money can serve that. And you're not just thinking only as deep as the money. You've got a deeper base layer of what it's all there for.
Yeah. It's very probably important.
Yeah. I can hop off the soapbox, but I think so much of my job, like I thought I was going to be a financial advisor, but it gets so psychological so quickly because the saying is personal finance is 80% personal and only 20% finance. And it's even more powerful in the Bitcoin world because Bitcoin is such a powerful tool.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. No, I'm happy you hopped on that soapbox because especially right now, as we passed all-time highs earlier, we're a little below it, but who knows, could continue and things are going to get crazy. And it's important to have this perspective in mind as things are getting crazy.
Yeah. And as they get crazy and you feel right and your thesis was proved, just remember that you being right about this is also simultaneously painful for the rest of the world who doesn't see it as early as you. Like it's that just don't dance from the Big Short. Like, this is what he says, right? This is not a good thing we're going through. It's good that we have a solution, but you understand the solution far more than 99% of the world. And 99% of the world going through pain is not, it's probably what's happening. I prefer it happen slower than all at once, but just don't dance because, connecting to the things that are deeper than money will help you from dancing as others are yet to transition and haven't found Bitcoin yet.
Yeah. Get so distracted at t-ball games that you don't even think to dance.
Just losing your mind at throwing peanuts.
But speaking of things do seem to be getting out of whack in the traditional
financial system. It seems like Japan's completely lost control of their yield curve. Looks like we're losing control of our yield curve here in the United States.
Is Japan losing their bond market to Metaplanet?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it could, it's very
possible.
The whole
bond market of Japan just flowed into a hotel company.
That's why I tweeted that out yesterday. I was like, are the Japanese using Metaplanet as a Bitcoin proxy?
Yeah, they're like safety. The MicroStrategy of their country, right? Like, you know, just the escape hatch is tiny, and so it can easily blow out when the flood comes.
None. For those who are unaware, I think Japan's tax situation is such where it's a massive tax benefit to buy stocks over spot Bitcoin as well.
Yep.
So it makes sense that people would flow into Metaplanet.
Yeah. I think if I could segue it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's that every country's got that different tax, right? Japan, I'm not familiar with their tax regime, but pretty familiar with America's. And that is what drives so much. It's the number one friction in people's lives, right? The CPAs are in business because tax is there. It's a powerful reason why loans exist. I don't want to sell my Bitcoin and pay tax. I'd rather take a loan against it. IRAs, gains, losses. Bitcoin's trying to be money, but it's not taxed like money. It's taxed like property. And I had used Saylor and Jack Mahler's like had different opinions on this, or I think even Odell had one that what is Bitcoin? Saylor will say property. Maybe an Odell would say something like money. Yes, technologically, Bitcoin's trying to be money and money is prop. But the where they disagree is like that tax component. It's so powerful to just hodl or hold Bitcoin because of the tax friction. And so the thing I pay most attention to is which countries are easing up the friction on people. El Salvador being a great example, but you see other countries or even states in America where they're trying to do something with cap gains or reduce frictions in and out of certain structures. I think that's where all of the, as the flood's coming and Bitcoin is hitting the global world, the water is going to find its sweet spot, right? In the jurisdictions that carve the trench for it. And so the number one thing I'm paying attention to for my clients is what's coming in this big, beautiful tax bill, right? Trump has called it big and beautiful. Great. I'm sure it's beautiful. What's in it? And how does that tax affect the Bitcoiners or maybe even other parts of that, you know, Bitcoiners' financial life? But that's once they change the game of the friction, that's what you navigate for people because it's not an opinion of price. Price can do this or that or you know, Metaplanet or Microsoft. They might do this. Those are just crystal ball and opinion taxes here and now. And if you say if you do X, Y and Z, you're going to save this much money. Very, very powerful, sometimes boring. Right? People don't like tax, but that is a needle mover in Bitcoiners' financial lives.
And so what can we expect with this big, beautiful tax bill?
Oh, goodness. I've heard they're going to eliminate the IRS. Doesn't sound like it would need to be a big, beautiful tax bill to do that. So if it's big and beautiful, it's probably got a lot of different bells and whistles that are likely an extension of the TCJA. So I know I see there's jockeying between the Senate and the House and like what's going to be in it or what's not. I imagine it's something like the TCJA bill we've had for the last 7 years with maybe some new caveats. Things that Bitcoiners could pay attention to, bonus depreciation, if mining is on your radar, right? Being able to depreciate those mining machines could look at like, and this is just a side note, that the public miners aren't able to pass through losses or that bonus depreciation, but the privates sometimes can. And so that could be a benefit. Bonus depreciation comes back. I'd be looking at if you're exposed to the mining space, like, well, now do we buy rigs because we can write it all off? Social Security, if that's a part of your now or your future, there might be no tax on that. No tax on tips if you're in the service industry. There could be others. They do end up getting rid of the IRS. There's some strategies for that too. You know, maybe it's selling all your Bitcoin and buying it right back to lock in a new basis. Talk to some clients that think the IRS will go away. there's a potential strategy of sell your $100 Bitcoin and buy the $110,000 Bitcoin if there's no IRS. Reset your basis and floor. You could do Roth conversions. There's so many what ifs that I'm just telling many, many clients, let's pause, let's see what the rules are, and then I'll help you play the game after that.
Do you think no capital gains on Bitcoin is on the table?
That'd be nice. Yeah. On whose table? I don't know about, I mean, America needs money. Even if they got rid of the IRS, like, where's the money going to come from? There's probably a large, they did that. That's a tariff regime, right? They're going to have to get the money from somewhere else. Cap gains would be internal. They're losing a big chunk of revenue for not taxing that. Is it only to Bitcoin? Would it be to stocks and real estate as well? I think it's pretty far-fetched. I would give it a 5, 10% chance. Nothing zero these days. Lots of craziness, but not a base case. If there's no cap gains, I'm personally probably waiting till December 31st of the year so they don't change their mind and say, okay. And then I'll sell the Bitcoin and buy it right back to lock in a higher basis.
Yeah. Wild times, Jesse. Wild times.
Wild times, yes.
Thank you for coming on. Particularly
you're welcome.
Helping people gain perspective on how to approach this. Things are going to get weird. Both in the Bitcoin world and the fiat world. Try to keep your head on straight. Yeah. Stay humble. Don't become beholden to the whims of FOMO and animal spirits and have a plan and stick to it.
Yeah, I think I've heard you say, is this peak, clown world? Like, is it peak? It's like, maybe the peak is correlated with M2 money supply. Like, it's more, the more they print, the more the peaks just keep coming.
It's going up. Going up forever, Lara.
Hyper bullish on peak clown world.
Clown world is going up forever, Jesse. Yeah. Yeah. Where can people...
Is there a ticker, CLWN? Can I invest in peak clown world?
Not yet. Just wait. That'll come.
It's a treasury company. You're going to SPAC it out?
That'll come. Okay. Where can people find out more about Gannett?
Gannett is at GannettTrust.com. They are operationalizing, standing it up as we speak. So chartered Wyoming trust company, getting installed and rolling out to Unchained clients first, probably in the second half of the year, that'll be made more broadly available to others. So GannettTrust.com. If you're interested in learning what that rollout looks like, you can request an introduction there. Sound Advisory, which I help run, is going to be tucking up and under Gannett Trust over the next few months and will be the wealth advisory arm of the trust company. And then that can currently be found at thesoundadvisory.com, but it'll tuck under Gannett eventually. And as always, Unchained, the parent company and umbrella, the leader of the umbrella family, is unchained.com for their products and services.
Check it out. Think about using unchained.com/TFTC if you want to engage in anything they're doing there.
Check it out.
Jesse, thank you.
You're welcome.
I know, and congrats on getting Gannett out there, because I know it's been a long haul. It's very important to do it correctly. And for anybody out there, high net worth individual, somebody managing a corporate balance sheet, or a pension fund, whatever it may be, looking for.
Say for fiduciaries, families, founders. So if you're in that world, we'd love to start a conversation with you. And as the world gets crazier and develops and there's more products, we are doing our part to try and build and solve what we think is needed in the space. And Gannett was a lot of proof of work, and proud of the team that launched it, and we'll see what we can do with that Swiss Army knife here in the coming years.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it flourish.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Peace and love, freaks. Ta-kay!